south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. A couple of shows ago, I was talking about buying vintage cars down here. You see them all the time. Unfortunately, so many of them have been terribly damaged or ruined by the sun. Do remember, the sun here in Latin America is fierce. That means if you pick up a cool old muscle car, something from the 50s or 60s, no matter how nice it looks from 50 or 100 feet away, as you get closer, you'll start seeing that all the rubber and plastic parts are shot. And for sure, the upholstery. Oh, by the way, speaking of upholstery, they have some fantastic upholstery shops down here. So whether you're talking about car seats, chairs, sofas, whatever, there are little hole-in-the-wall upholstery shops down here in every neighborhood that can do wonders. Cloth, leather, you name it. By the way, they got some of the best leather down here too. And of course, unless you're smack on the Gringo Tourist Trail, you'll be paying half or less than what you'd pay for the same thing up in the States. So don't be afraid to rummage around and buy used furniture that might look completely shot. If it's structurally sound and well-made, it doesn't matter if the upholstery's ripped to shreds or embedded with cat pee or dog doo-doo. These upholstery guys down here can do wonders. I've seen it. By the way, the material almost always seems to cost a lot more than the labor. Down here, a good upholsterer gets around $20 to $25 a day, not an hour. Of course, I've seen some real crap upholstery jobs too, but that's what you get in any field, right? The good, the bad, the ugly, and the great. You just have to know the difference. Oh, and this I have to mention. When you buy a new car down here, if you really like the car and you want to buy it, tell the guy you will if he throws in the leather upholstery for free. Leather always adds a little comfort, luxury, and elegance to a car, doesn't it? Yeah, I know what you're thinking. If you're from Cleveland or Chicago, you jump in the car in the morning and you freeze your cojones off. Well, you're not in Kansas anymore, Dorothy. The average temperature down here is between 60 and 85 degrees. Now get this, up in the States, if you choose the leather seat option for a new car, it's at least $1,500 to $2,500 as an option. We're talking about factory options now. Here in Latin America, you can buy a brand new car and get your leather seats two different ways. One, as a factory option. That means it's been shipped from the factory with leather seats, almost always on the deluxe models. However, if you're looking at a much cheaper, basic model with cloth seats and you've just said to the dealer, I'll take it, provided you throw in leather seats, he'll probably do it, but you're not going to get the factory option leather seats. You'll get aftermarket leather seats, but they will be excellent. Because you see, all new car dealerships down here anyway have a deal with a local upholstery shop. They'll rip out the cloth seats, replace them with leather, and it's done so well, you just can't tell it didn't come from the factory. How do you think they can throw an option like that in for nothing? So you've got factory leather seats and the seats the local upholstery guy installs. So what's the difference? Even side by side, you really can't tell. That's how good these upholsterers are. But we're talking about scooping up vintage cars down here, right? Now, the odd thing is there are vintage car clubs all over the place here in Latin America. Even, oddly enough, non-vintage car clubs. For Latin aficionados of cars that really aren't anything special at all and never were. Like Honda Civics, Nissan Sentras, and Volkswagen Jettas. And the owners trick them all out. Go figure, huh? To us, it's pretty ridiculous, but to Latins who own cars like that, it's a pretty serious thing. So when you're driving along or in a parking lot and you see one of these tricked out 1500cc pieces of mediocre nothing, try not to laugh, at least not in their faces anyway. Yep, I'm serious, they'll do that on a Honda Civic and it's totally ridiculous. But for the locals, just to have a halfway decent car is something special. That's why Latin owners will form clubs around cars that most gringo parents would pawn off on their kids when they first turn 16. You know the drill. You give them the car you consider expendable. Oh, and Latin guys also form clubs around crappy motorcycle brands too, which gives a lot of credence to what expat Eddie always says about the macho society in Latin men. No matter what chronological age they are, their brain is kind of stuck at 17. That said, every once in a while, you'll see in a local newspaper an ad for a car show. Or, pulling up to a big mall, you might see a car show going on in the parking lot. That stuff interests me. I grew up in the muscle car era, even though I couldn't afford one. I always got stuck with Ramblers, Pintos, and Ford Fairlanes. So when I see one of those shows, I always stop in and check it out. Sometimes it's the laughable Honda Civic Club, and sometimes it's a show with very nice vintage cars. Though, as mentioned in a previous show, as you get closer, you see the defects. In fact, I don't think I've ever seen a classic or vintage car here that's a fully restored, pristine 10-pointer, or what you might call Cherry. Yeah, Cherry. That was kind of like the 1970s Motorhead equivalent of the word awesome. Nope, nothing gender neutral about that. Therefore, totally un-PC, right? I don't care. But where were we? Oh yeah, we were saying the closer you get to one of these vintage vehicles in a car show, the rattier they look. In fact, most gringos I know who were into the car thing up in the States would be embarrassed to put a car that was less than perfect in a show. Details, details, huh? Come on, the idea of putting your vehicle in a car show is to have it so nicely restored that it beats the competition, right? And even though down here these guys are extremely proud of their cars and think they're restored, man, they're living in fantasy land. They just have no idea. Except, and this makes sense, when they have the upholstery redone. Since there are so many excellent upholsterers down here, they really have got the seats covered. Ooh, bad pun. So, to maintain the fantasy, all other details should be observed, just like with bars and discos, in dim lighting, not in broad daylight. So anyway, a couple shows ago, I was talking about buying antique, classic, and vintage cars down here. And bottom line, if that's what you're into, it's buyer beware. So I got a slew of emails after that. I'll get to one of my favorite ones in a minute. But first, something very important, so pay attention. You also heard me mention on that show about cars that it's a buyer's market down here. There's a flood of used cars, especially in Central America. Not so much in South America. Why? Because once they're driven to Panama, they can't go any farther south. There's no road. So why are the cars piling up in Central America? Well, turns out all those big online car auction houses up in the States are easy access for people in Central America. They buy them online, have them shipped down, get the bodywork done for a song, and they look good as new. But are they really? Well, that brings us back to buyer beware and why I'm bringing this up right now. Here's the important part, and it's a warning. In the next couple of months, and for who knows how long, there'll be a steady flow of cars coming from those auction houses up in the States that were junked or scrapped due to the severe water damage from, guess what? Hurricane Harvey and the others. Where'd you think all those tens of thousands of water-damaged cars would go after everything kind of calmed down? Yep, it'll be exactly like what happened during Hurricane Katrina a little over 10 years ago now. Tens of thousands of waterlogged cars got scrapped and sold for salvage. They went to the big auction houses, got bought up for basically scrap value, shipped down to Central America, were nicely restored cosmetically anyway. They even got that nasty, moldy smell out of most of them. However, think about all the wiring harnesses and connectors that were underwater. Salt water, too. That's the problem. Everything could work perfectly fine today and poop out tomorrow. So how will you know if the car has been flooded out and restored? Well, you won't. It definitely won't say that on the paperwork or the title. Because, you know, when you buy a car down here, it'll be a brand new title in Spanish for whatever country you bought it in. Though, admittedly, if you get the VIN number down, there are ways to check out the history of that car. But there's no guarantee. So my advice, if you're in the market for a used car down here, buy one that was originally bought at a Latin dealership. You remember how to determine that, right? Not so hard. Just sit down at the wheel and have a look at the speedometer and odometer. If they're in kilometers instead of miles per hour, the car was initially bought new at a Latin dealership. Because everything sold new at dealerships is in the metric system. If it's in miles or miles per hour, it was shipped down from the States. Most probably as a wreck and then restored, but you'll never know how much of a wreck it was. Now, I know some odometers and such have both miles an hour and kilometers per hour too, a dual system. In that case, how can you tell if it was bought new at a dealer or shipped down as a wreck? Well, have a look at the owner's manual, if there is one, and it'll be in the glove box. If it's totally in Spanish, you're in luck. If it's in English, well, it's from the States. If it's in both Spanish and English, then you've got no clue again. And do look at the numbers that are clicking over on the odometer, not the speedometer, which tells you how fast you're going. The odometer tells you how many miles traveled, or kilometers. Even though these days many cars will be in both kilometers and miles per hour, the odometer will be in one or the other, either miles traveled or kilometers traveled, then you know. Oh, and don't forget to look at the back of the car, right on the bumper or near the trunk. If the car originally came from the States, there'll often be a sticker, a chrome decal or icon, indicating the U.S. car dealership it was originally purchased from. For instance, Ned Locke's Ford, Highland Park, or Izzy's Hummer's, Evanston. Oddly enough, people who ship those cars down rarely take off the stickers and logos. Don't ask me why, but they just don't. A sure sign the car was brought down from the States and possibly a total wreck and restored. Now, traditionally, when you bought a used car down here in Latin America, and it was not from a Latin dealership, you were buying a pig and a poke, but it was always cheaper. Sometimes quite a bit cheaper. That's what keeps the business going. Oh, and one more thing. Did you know that cars coming from the U.S. have heavy pollution control equipment on them, and cars that originate from a dealership here in Latin America don't? Why is that? Well, remember, down here, no Big Brother, no EPA. So again, if you're buying a car that came from the States, you're buying a pig and a poke. I'm sorry, I can't help it, but every time I hear someone say that, I think of Oprah Winfrey and Michael Moore mud wrestling. Ew. But I digress. Bottom line, I'd say starting probably in October, I would not even think about buying a car that was brought down from the States. Why test fate, huh? Oh, and I have to talk about Hurricane Harvey for a second. You know, all of us expats and gringos down here in Latin America are interested in the hurricane damage up in the States because we all have friends and relatives who live directly in the path. So just the other day, I was flicking through U.S. cable TV channels, checking out the weather and all, and the first station I landed on was a Houston CBS station. And there, the weather lady was going down a checklist of the things you should stock up on to be safe. Be prepared. The usual suspects. Food, water, blankets, lanterns, batteries. Though it struck me funny what she said next. Don't forget to have a nice stash of cash in small denominations, in case the banks are closed and the ATMs are down. Huh? Wait a minute. Haven't we been hearing for months at a time that the U.S. is moving towards a cashless society? In fact, I just read that Norway and Switzerland will be the next to phase out cash completely. What's going on here? Somebody better clue me in and all those people giving hurricane and disaster survival advice on TV. On the one hand, they're telling you to have cash on hand in small denominations. And on the other hand, they're saying soon enough, cash will be eliminated. By the way, eventually I saw that advice given on three different U.S. TV stations. Something's really wrong with that picture. And you know, I hate the funny money fiat currency system as we know it, but the truth is, hoarding cash for an emergency situation is a great idea. Of course, gold, silver, Bitcoin, batteries, baseball, bats, and bullets will be great negotiable bartering items when the big reset button is hit. Did I say baseball bats? Well, maybe. But there is no way any of that stuff will be convertible instantly. There'll just be way too much chaos at first, and that's when you'll need a nice stack of sad-looking presidents. Of course, after a while, when things level out, then you can pull out the gold, silver, bitcoins, bullets, baseball bats, and whatever cash you might have left to be used as toilet paper. But the bottom line is you really have to have a nice reserve of cash on hand when the next crisis hits. But again, I don't get it. First world, Big Brother countries are really trying to remove cash from society. Yet with these hurricanes, we're seeing proof right now, a nice wake-up call, that cash will be necessary, at least in the first stages of a calamity. By the way, speaking of calamities, I got a few emails lately asking me, Johnny, do hurricanes hit Latin America very often? And the answer is about as frequently as they hit the States, though they only really do their damage up and down the Atlantic coast of Latin America. They usually start out in the mid-Atlantic, and then they sweep through the Caribbean. From there, if they don't die off, they're just as likely to hit the U.S. or the Gulf of Mexico as they are to hit the eastern coast of Central America. It's good to know that it's very rare that hurricanes hit south of Colombia, so South America is pretty much hurricane-free. In fact, South America has only had one big hurricane hit in the last 60 years. So the Atlantic or Caribbean side of Central America does get its share of hurricanes, and the Pacific coastal areas, not so much at all. Again, they're not that destructive, and nothing compared to the ones that come through the Caribbean and whip up through the Gulf of Mexico, like Katrina or Harvey. And here's good news. If you're living in the Latin American Altiplano, you never get hit by the full brunt of a hurricane. When a hurricane hits coastal lands, that's when it does all the damage. But Altiplano areas are high up in elevation, and there's nothing that takes the wind out of a hurricane faster than when it butts up against a mountain or plateau. So, for example, even quite a while back when one of the biggest hurricanes hit the Atlantic coast of Central America, that would have been Mitch. Remember Mitch? The Altiplano regions nearby had a hell of a lot of rain, but very, very minimal wind damage. But the coastal areas, they got walloped. So chalk up another few points for the Altiplano. All right, speaking of natural disasters and events that just might trigger a worldwide reset button, correct me if I'm wrong, but most all of you listeners happen to be living in the most litigation-prone, lawyered-up country that's ever existed. You live side by side with Big Brother. He's always looking over your shoulder, where asset confiscation and frivolous lawsuits are the norm. Am I right so far? So, whether you know it or not, there's a giant bullseye painted on your house and your bank account. So then, why in the world would you want to hold 100% of your assets, income, and capital in a country where you could quickly be relieved of all that and without due process? Am I right so far? Most Americans these days admit they're afraid of the cops, the IRS, lawyers, and their own government. So let me get this straight. Most of you listeners are living in a country where the government, by its own reports, admits that it's broke and every state bankrupt too. Worse than broke, it admits it'll never be able to pay back its debts, even if they taxed everyone at 100%. Now, I left the States more than 27 years ago. And I tell you, if I lived there right now, I wouldn't be able to sleep at night. And if I could, I'd be in denial like 90% of everyone else is up there. Certainly on Prozac or some other psychotropic medicines. So what are you taking? You must be on something, right? By the way, I asked my 50-something brother that when he came down a couple weeks ago, and he said that he was taking a half dozen very expensive prescription medicine. Then he said with a sneaky gleam in his eye, "But I'm not paying for it. Insurance is." And I'm thinking that's the reaction you get from millions of Americans these days. As long as someone else is paying for the stuff, bring it on. Speaking of denial, now that a big section of the U.S. gets to see and feel the damage done by a big hurricane, those who have been in denial about self-responsibility, that is, people who want the government to be their savior, have just had their big wake-up call. So the question is, when the next disaster hits and the big reset button is pushed, you'll be sitting pretty, right? You'll have food, water, power, guns, bullets. You'll get through it. You're ready, correct? You've got a bug-out bag and a safe, secure bug-out location, right? By the way, how you set up for an EMP? You got generators, gas, diesel, solar? A Faraday cage? Have you even heard of a Faraday cage? I know, you're all set. You won't come up short when the next disaster strikes. Now, not to rub it in, but no matter what happens up in the first world, in most places here in Latin America, especially off the Gringo Tourist Trail, life will go on as usual, maybe with a couple of hiccups, but it will go on, and no doubt about it, we will worry. Not so much about us down here, we'll be all right, but about you, our friends and family up in the States. Take my lifestyle, for example. When that big reset button finally gets pushed, I'll be watching from a nice safe distance. And just for the record, I'm no prepper, not in the alternative media / biblical doomsday sense of the word. For example, I've got a 700 cubic foot cistern under my garage slab. Probably cost me around $300 to have it done. Fills up with rainwater off my roof. And even in the dry season, if there's no rain, it'll last a family of four 2 months easily. And during that 6-month rainy season, it's filled to the brim because, well, there's way too much water. Now, there's a nice problem to have, way too much water. Not to mention I've got at least 20 different avocado and fruit trees. And they also produce way too much, so I'm always giving that stuff away. And my stove and dryer run on propane gas. I've got 200-pound tanks that last at least a year. And to fill both those tanks, around $100. Got a solar hot water heater on the roof, too. A small gas-powered electric generator in case the power goes out. And it does once in a while in a storm, but never for more than a couple hours. You get the picture. I'm not a traditional prepper by any means. Don't need to be when you have four growing seasons and the temperatures such that you don't need heating or air conditioning. By the way, here in Latin America, we are not in any way, shape, or form connected to your first world power grid. Most all Latin countries have their own freestanding power grids and power plants and such. Which reminds me, no nuclear power plants in Central America at all. A few in South America, though, Argentina and Brazil, those idiots. And Mexico's toying with it, too. But you know, Mexico's not part of Central America. It's part of North America. You knew that, right? Anyway, as it turns out, whatever Latin American country you pick to live, work, play, and or hang out, you'll find there's nothing strategic when first world countries start lobbing missiles at each other. except Panama. It's got that big old canal. Half of all the Chinese container ships pass through that place, you know. Bottom line, if you think the big reset's going to be about world war, then you might want to scratch Panama off your list. There's a lot of international saber-rattling going on right now, you know. However, I'm betting it's going to be a funny money monetary economic reset. But who knows? My crystal ball's on the blink. And I'll tell you, there's one thing you definitely need to do right now. That is, get the right kind of boots on the ground here in Latin America. And get moving on your plan B. It's the best insurance policy you could have. So whether you have a full-time or part-time plan B, it doesn't matter. Your best bet to get rolling on either one is to come down to my January 2018 Expat Insider Seminar. Yep, the info, the itinerary, and the sign-up sheet are linked up and ready to go. Just go to www.thenewexpat.com. Oh, and if you sign up now, you get a $500 early bird discount. Not to mention, when you sign up, you automatically qualify for a one-on-one phone or Skype consultation with me. However, if you just can't make it down to the seminar and get boots on the ground yourself, the very next best thing is to sign up for my 9-hour Expat Essentials course. Just go to expatplanb.com. That's where you'll get my free introductory video that explains it all. Now, about working through the various steps in your own plan B. Some people work through it quite easily, and others hit a few roadblocks along the way. That's why I'm available for one-on-one phone consultations. To get started with that, you first download my phone questionnaire form, also at thenewexpat.com. Go ahead, download it. People who have done so say it gives them a lot of good ideas, and it's free. Now, after last week's show, where I was talking about vintage and classic cars, I got my usual mess of emails. This one comes from Randy. He says, "Johnny, I think you like this one for your show." He sent me an article and a nice picture of a Corvette. It starts out, a man named Tom Nicholson posted on his Facebook account a sports car that he had just bought, and how a man approached him and told him that the money used to buy this car could have fed thousands of less fortunate people. So Tom Nicholson's response to this man made him kind of famous on the internet. This is what was posted on Facebook. It starts out, "A guy looked at my Corvette the other day and said, 'I wonder how many people could have been fed for the money that sports car cost.' I replied, 'I'm not sure. It fed a lot of families in Bowling Green, Kentucky who built it. It fed the people who made the tires. It fed the people who made the components that went into it. It fed the people in the copper mine who mined the copper for the wires. It fed people in Decatur, Illinois, at Caterpillar, who made the trucks that hauled the stuff. It fed truck drivers and the people who loaded the trucks. It fed the people who hauled the parts from plant to dealer, and fed the people working at the dealerships and their families too." Then he says, "That's the difference between capitalism and the welfare mentality. When you buy something, you put money in people's pockets and give them dignity for their skills. When you give someone something for nothing, you rob them of the dignity and self-worth. Whereas capitalism is freely giving your money in exchange for something of value, socialism is taking your money against your will and shoving something down your throat that you never asked for." Then he said, "I just can't be politically correct anymore. Inside, I never was." By the way, this posting on Facebook with his answer made him famous on the internet, receiving more than 500,000 shares and more than 800,000 reactions. All right, me, Johnny, again saying, I hope you're listening out there, Bernie Sanders. I know you're not. Now, there's a guy who never had a real job in his life. Why do guys like that always end up floating to the top of the pecking order in Washington? Just like big chunks in the toilet always do. Yep, we're talking socialism now. You know, even when I was a teenager, my uncle used to say, it's every pseudo-intellectual and public school teacher's rationale for picking your pocket. Yeah, it does work great until you run out of other people's money. By the way, have I told you that there are many, many public universities in Latin America? Every country's got what they call the Casa Matriz, that would be the mothership, located in the country's capital city, along with many smaller university extensions in other towns. By the way, they're virtually free compared to private universities. The tuition's around $100 to $200 a year. But as you know, nothing's for nothing. The money's got to come from somewhere. And the object of these free Latin universities is to give the opportunity for all socioeconomic classes to get a college education. Sounds good, right? Except for the fact that these schools are absolute breeding grounds for Marxist thought and socialism. They pump out huge numbers of students with absolutely worthless degrees like psychology, sociology, art, journalism, and political science. And the stats show that up to 80% of the graduates never, ever get a job in their own chosen field. Now, where have I heard that before? Do note, when you walk through these campuses, you always see very complimentary posters of guys like Che Guevara, Uncle Fidel, and Hugo Chavez, depicted as revolutionary Latin American freedom fighters. Yep, on those free public university campuses, those guys are heroes. In fact, about a year ago, I was on a campus at one of those big public universities. And you listeners know I like to check out bulletin boards, and they're everywhere on university campuses. Or is it campi? No, I think it's campuses. Well, I saw these posters going up everywhere, and when I looked at them closely, I had to do a double take. The posters said next Tuesday will be a day off, a free day, a holiday. This was a new one. That's why I did a double take. Why? Because in the center of that poster was a tough-looking military photo of Uncle Fidel in his prime, sporting all the cliches, the beret, the cigar, the camouflage pants. Well, you probably guessed that the day off was in honor of good old Fidel, who just died. By the way, when I get this show up on YouTube, you'll see a photo of one of those posters. Yep, the number one Latin socialist icon had passed. Gone, but not forgotten. Now, in the private universities throughout Latin America, the ones where you have to actually pay tuition, no posters, no memorial, not even a mention. Why? Because in most private universities, he was considered a ruthless, petty, strong-armed dictator. So that's how it is here in Latin America. The universities are divided. The private ones, well, they're for private enterprise, capitalism, all that. The public ones, socialist ideologues. That's why so many Latin governments have a socialist bent to them. There is a strong connection, in fact, a revolving door, between MAGAist bureaucrats in government and teaching positions at the public universities. So what's that mean? Well, if you were to get a list of the faculty at a public university, you'd find teachers and professors routinely rotating in and out of government, which is why Latin public university teacher salaries are 2 to 3 times higher than they are in the private sector. That's why so many high-level government bureaucrats, when they retire, end up as vastly overpaid and totally underqualified professors. So it's not hard to imagine why so many Latin governments are infected with socialist ideologies. Oh, and when Hugo Chavez died, many public universities got that day off too.
South of the border.
This is the Expat Files, living in Latin America. If you want me to help you out with your own Plan B, just schedule a one-on-one consult. Send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to learn how to move forward with your own Plan B from right up there in the States, go to www.expatplanb.com and check out my 3 videos. See ya. Nos vemos.